This episode is sponsored by the On with Origins podcast. Learn how crediting experts conquer today's toughest challenges while driving measurable results. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible. Now on to the show.
Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome back to our continued coverage of the PSCU Member Forum here in Tampa, Florida. Well, actually, we are closing it out, our coverage, with Mr. Lou Grilli from PSCU. Lou?
Hi.
How are you, sir?
Doing good. Maybe a little bit of information overload.
There was a lot of content.
End of 3 days of just amazing conference, networking, so much good stuff.
Mm-hmm. And it goes by like fast.
It did.
It goes by so fast. Yeah. And
in a lot of cases, I am meeting people for the first time in person.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. Because of the Zoom type stuff?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Pandemic aftermath here,
right.
The wake of the pandemic, so you're finally seeing people in person that you've been talking to for 2 years. So,
yep.
I hear that.
One of the disappointments of this conference, it's like, where's he going with this, is breakouts. We had several breakouts, and obviously I could only attend one of them. I wanted to attend many of them, so I believe that they've all been recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll all be made available, so I'm going to go back and check out a number of the breakouts that I couldn't go to.
Yeah, me too. I couldn't go to any of them, so I'm going to go check them out. I only went to one set. Well, I saw Chuck's opening, and then I saw the CEO panel with Mark Seabright,
right.
Tansley Stearns, and Christine Blake, and Kelly Botto. Sorry, Kelly, I didn't get your last name. But anyway, yeah, a fantastic CEO session up there. So anyway, I digress. Let's talk about what you want to talk about, sir, and that is, where in the world is crypto? What is going on? Where is it hiding?
So,
actually, I think it's starting to come back a little bit.
Yes. lots of talk about crypto, but there's something that I've been working on. I was asked by CUNA and Naskis to talk about compliance for credit unions when it comes to crypto. Something that was basically not on my regular talk track.
Yeah.
And so I developed a presentation for it, really well received,
mm-hmm.
and then I started writing it up because I still kept learning more about why is compliance for crypto transactions so unique. And I wrote it up into a white paper. It's not available yet. I was hoping it'd be available for this conference, but it's being worked on, and it will be available sometime after this.
Okay, cool. Well, we will be on the lookout for it, and when it's available, we will send it out to our folks as well. So I'm sure it's an excellent piece of work, sir.
It's long. Hopefully, the editors will do a nice job cutting it down a little bit, making it a little more reviewable. But compliance for crypto is something, basically even a new topic for me.
Yeah, no doubt. But also, I think it legitimizes that. I think it legitimizes crypto, don't you think? Because a lot of people think that it's kind of sketchy, even still.
Well,
so, if you regulate it and have some compliance around it, then some guardrails, if you will, then I think people are more apt to check it out and get more serious about it.
Yes.
Possibly?
But
I'm barking up the wrong tree.
No, you're absolutely right. But I would counter that by saying members are going off and buying crypto,
yes.
from exchanges like Kraken and Binance US, hopefully.
Yeah.
And so they're doing that anyway. It's just a matter of, is the compliance team keeping up with and changing and modifying their procedures in order to accommodate this activity,
mm-hmm.
that's going on anyway,
yeah.
whether it's legitimate or not.
Right. So my first question to you, why is compliance for crypto transactions such as buying a Bitcoin from crypto.com or Coinbase any different from other purchases?
So at a transactional level, it's not that different, but historically, compliance teams look at outgoing transactions, making sure that money flowing out of the credit union is not going to a bad person, to an OFAC sanctioned place, making sure that they're remaining in compliance with AML, filing suspicious activity reports, etc. But their cryptocurrency enables money to move lightning fast.
Mm-hmm.
And money laundering is nothing new, right? Al Capone was not arrested for bootlegging. He was arrested for money laundering,
yep.
right?
Yeah.
The agents that got him on money laundering.
Yes.
However, crypto just makes money laundering that much quicker, easier. And when I'm talking money laundering, I'm talking things like drug sales, human trafficking, and even laundering money from the scams that unfortunately many members fall for. So now it's time to look not just at money going out of the credit union, but also money coming into the credit union. And that's not historically a place to look at. As one example, this was fascinating to me. Reuters, the big news agency.
Reuters,
thanks. Wrote up a story that last year, $400 million of using crypto was moved to North Korea to fund their missile program. And what's interesting, that was not a single like $400 million heist of a crypto exchange. That is thousands and thousands of small dollar scams, as in tricking you into going to this website to buy crypto at a better rate. And then that money needs to move through accounts in order then to be aggregated to be sent back again. Right, it needs to kind of be shuffled around. And that is the money laundering that now credit union members are getting involved in. Some of them unknowingly, some of them unwittingly, some of them maybe just fall for this, hey, you can make a little extra money on the side by accepting this into your account, and then we'll take care of the rest. This is all new. This is new stuff.
Goodness gracious. See, that's why I kind of steered away from it in the kind of the beginning, like in the early teens, I guess, 14, 15, 16, that type of year. Because all I was associated with it at that time was like these illegal activities. I'm like, I want no part of this. And then all of a sudden it hit mainstream when it started going crazy on the investment.
And unfortunately, there is still illegal activity.
It's still as there is with any type of currency out there. But yeah, Bitcoin is still there. So, all right, hey, what do compliance officers and their teams at credit unions need to be on the lookout for? You talked about incoming
and that was
crypto.
That was the first thing I was going to say is make sure that you're looking at incoming. Rewriting procedures to understand what is suspicious. If money is, how about this? If a member makes a, a $5,000 transaction on Coinbase, and they've done like a $1,000, $2,000, well, maybe that's not suspicious. But a member makes a, I'm just being like kind of exaggerated here, but a member never has done anything in crypto and all of a sudden makes a $9,989 purchase of crypto at 3 a.m. That should raise a whole bunch
of
flags.
It's a bit odd, yes.
Yeah, exactly. And I purposely picked just below the 10,000. And that's the interesting thing is the bad guys will try to do these very small dollar transactions to stay under the radar and hopefully to stay on even the members' radar. Maybe you don't even notice these transactions flowing through your account because there's been account takeover. OFAC checking. A lot of credit unions, how about historically? I don't know about longer. I have spoken with credit unions who update their OFAC screening lists on a monthly basis. However, OFAC lists are updated on a daily basis as they encounter things. There's things called crypto mixers, where, again, I'll just use the North Koreans as the bad guys in this case, but they take money from many different scams that they've enabled, that people have fallen for, members in some cases, and then they don't want the money to be traceable. Blockchain is interesting. Blockchain is very open, transparent. You can go out, you may not know who the wallet owner is, but you can see and trace where the transaction went from and to, and obviously the bad guys don't want that.
Right, right.
So there's these things exist pretty much only for nefarious reasons. That are crypto mixers, and they take many different streams of money and then kind of shuffle them around and then send out many streams of money. So at that point, it makes it really hard to track. So certainly, any transaction going to a mixer should be considered suspicious activity.
Can that be tracked? Like, if this type of money is coming into your credit union, can you see? Can somebody see that it went through a mixer and that therefore it would be suspicious funds?
It's really, really difficult, which is why those mixers typically end up, or the entities, either countries or individuals that are running those mixers, end up on OFAC screening lists. And all the more reason to update OFAC screening lists on a regular basis, and also to make sure that the screening is done on the incoming side as well as the outgoing side. Something that I had never heard of 2.5 years ago called the travel rule. Hopefully anybody who's involved in compliance, in fact, if you know better, email me, reach out to LinkedIn, on LinkedIn and correct me. But travel rule has been around for many years, part of the Bank Secrecy Act. And it says that any transaction must, over $3,000, must have account owner, account name, transaction amount, date, you know, basically all the information. So I, in my own mind, say financial institutions have been accidentally compliant because wire, ACH, credit, debit card transactions have all the information that's needed in order to be compliant.
Yes.
But now you have a whole new world of cryptocurrency. Just as, again, an extreme example, a member went to a exchange 7 years ago. Before that exchange was being told that they must have KYC.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're selling their cryptocurrency and want to bring it back to the to their shared draft account.
Sure.
But that information is not there. So, got a question, is the screening software actually looking at incoming payments to make sure that the credit union is not in violation of the travel rule when nobody was even thinking about the travel rule up until now? This is a whole new world that you can see why I got interested when writing this white paper, that this is all new to me, and I spoke with a whole room full of compliance specialists who were taking notes as I was talking.
I was about to ask you, isn't this a whole new world for the regulators as well?
In some cases, yes, or in some cases they knew about it, now they're just trying to get the word out,
which
is what I feel my role is too, is to help educate credit unions.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, because we need all the education we can get, especially in this area, because as we all know, this is where we're going, whether you like it or not. So, but in order to keep your members, you're going to have to offer a lot of these cryptocurrency services.
Yes.
Whether it's investing or transactions, that type of stuff, you're going to have to offer that type of stuff, or else your member's going to go somewhere else. So, to have all these things in place is going to have to be a have to at some point, right?
I just got done with my breakout panel.
Yeah.
I had three great panelists with me.
Good.
And that was kind of the subject of it, is credit unions. Definitely, this is not for all credit unions. Some credit unions who want to get into the space offer their credit union members the ability to buy, hold, sell crypto.
Right. There's a number of those out there right now. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. You've spoken with some of them. But they shouldn't be. They're not doing it for the revenue. They're not doing it for the.
Oh, no, no.
They're doing
it
because it's a yes, but also because they're offering their members a safer alternative that is safer, more compliant, and in many cases lower transaction fees than going off to these exchanges,
right.
Many of which are being fair and. Some of which are being investigated by SEC for being non-compliant, or FinCEN for not having AML up to date.
See, even more reason to do this stuff for your credit union, and even more reason for your credit union to offer it. So yeah, to have this stuff come from a trusted resource like your credit union is a no-brainer in my book. So anyway, I digress here. Your upcoming white paper, which you talked about at the top of here, it has a whole section on Bitcoin ATMs. I still find this fascinating. So what are these things, and what are the risks here? I mean,
right.
This is still like mind-blowing stuff.
This was super interesting to me too. I first noticed a Bitcoin ATM. There's a local sports bar across the Tampa Bay Rays play in St. Petersburg, and there's a sports bar close to it that you kind of wait and hang out, and they have a Bitcoin ATM. And I was like, I'm just gonna get, like, what is that? How does that work? So a Bitcoin ATM, it's called an ATM. It's very different than what you think of. You put in cash or your debit card, and there's an exchange behind it that is providing you Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin, whatever currencies they provide. And then you need a wallet. They'll provide you a wallet if you need one.
Yeah.
But you need a wallet for that currency that you just purchased using cash or your debit card, almost never credit card, to go into. And so I would always ask the waitstaff, hey, have you seen anybody, has anybody use this? Yeah, just a couple of days ago, I just saw somebody putting in money. Bitcoin ATMs, and by the way, there are 69,000 of them in the U.S. alone. And if you don't think you've ever seen one, just Google, I encourage everyone, just Google Bitcoin ATM near me. You'll be surprised at how many.
There's
two of them within, we're in downtown Tampa, within walking distance of here.
It sounds like the old where you go into the arcade and you put in a dollar and you get four tokens back or whatever.
Okay,
it sounds just like that, only this is all digital. It's all digital
currency,
right?
That's a perfect example. However, the use cases for Bitcoin ATMs. So the basic, how about the good use case is I want to buy cryptocurrency and I have cash and I put the cash in, or I want to use my debit card.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can always go to a crypto exchange and do that. Why do I need to use a crypto ATM?
Good point.
But there are some. There is legitimate use.
Sure.
And after that, it drops to some many illegitimate uses. And so money laundering, people who are making money from drug sales, they have cash. Human trafficking generates a lot of cash. And that's always nefarious uses. And then crypto scams, and this is becoming more and more common, unfortunately. The one that I keep hearing about is grandson calls grandma. Hey, I'm in trouble. I need money. Here's what I need you to do. Oh my God, where are you? I can't say. But I need you to do this. Go to, and this has already been researched, go to this sports bar, this convenience store with this crypto ATM. Bring your debit card with you. Okay, put in the debit. I'm going to send you a QR code via text. Hold up that, touch that. Are you touching the QR code? Okay, bring it up. Now show it in front of the machine. What, did it say that you just got your Bitcoin? Okay, thanks. Yeah, no, I'll talk to you as soon as I get home. Right. And then here's the problem is the member then turns around and disputes that transaction because they realize they've been scammed. They speak with their grandson, granddaughter, whatever.
Right.
And it's like, I didn't call you. Was it me? Oh my gosh. And now they're out. Whatever the maximum of their debit card is, sometimes as high as $10,000.
Oh,
this has happened. And I just feel bad for the member, but when they dispute that transaction, the dispute doesn't go through because the vendor provided what was paid for.
Mm-hmm.
It was an authorized transaction, mm-hmm. and the cryptocurrency was granted by mm-hmm. the exchange, so no, there's really no justification for the dispute. In that case, credit unions want to think about blocking Bitcoin ATMs, this very unique creature.
Interesting.
Block credit. You can't stop the member from going and getting cash out mm-hmm. of the ATM and then buying crypto with that, but certainly then they can't turn around and dispute it as a debit card transaction.
Right, right.
This is just a whole new world mm-hmm. that we're in, mm-hmm. which, and again, going back to the top, I feel bad for compliance officers and their teams to deal, you know, they had enough to deal with and now they have new things to deal with.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? If that was my granddaughter or grandson, they'd be out of luck because that is too complicated for this kid. I gotta travel somewhere, I gotta take my phone, I gotta do this QR code thing, what are you talking about? Forget it. You stay where you are. So,
unfortunately,
if you want cash, I'll put in an envelope and mail it to you.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of gullible people.
I'm just kidding. All right, last question here for you, Lou. What are some steps credit unions should be taking now to keep their credit union and their members safe in the cryptocurrency world?
There's so many. So I know, my thoughts here,
be another white paper for
this
you.
This is one thing that I really got alerted to at this conference that I was speaking at. There are fraud teams. They're usually well-staffed to handle credit card fraud, handling fraud. And then there's AML staff. Typically, they tend to run lean, and they deal with like ACH and wire transactions and making sure that those things remain compliant with Bank Secrecy Act and AML and OFAC checks and things like that. And there's too much activity going on. Now there's suspicious activity coming into the credit union. And here's the need for credit unions to have their AML and their fraud teams talk to each other. There's a couple of credit unions that I mentioned this and said, yeah, no, we actually started merging them. I said, that's brilliant. Because now something coming in could be money mule activity, like we talked about earlier,
mm-hmm.
and the member doesn't realize it, or maybe the member does realize it, but they kind of okayed it because mm-hmm. they're getting scammed.
Mm-hmm.
So now the fraud team, there's something that the AML team may not be used to doing, but the fraud team is reach out to the member. Hi, did you intend to get this money? Do you know what this money came from? Did somebody tell you to do this for you? Are you getting paid to do all those kinds of questions, which again is possibly new for the fraud team because
mm-hmm,
they're not necessarily used to dealing with crypto. So that is the first thing is fraud and AML teams start to work together specifically on crypto. Software, second thing, software. Typically, credit unions outsource their ACH screening, their wire screening, to third parties
mm-hmm.
for monitoring AML activity, for OFAC screening. But now it's time to go back to those vendors and say, so are you up to date on crypto? Are you looking at incoming transactions? How often is OFAC lists scrubbed? Are you monitoring for violations of the travel rule? All those kinds of things that some vendors are. Some vendors are really on top of that.
Good.
And I don't know if all of them are, but it's certainly worth a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
If for no other reason, maybe
mm-hmm.
the credit union gets educated by the vendor,
yep.
or maybe the vendor then has to go back and take a look at things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The third one, this I know I, oh, my standard talk track is member education is paramount. You got to educate your members. But I was kind of corrected in that. No. You know what's really important? Educating credit union staff. Because the members... The members who want to research this are going into Google, or they're clicking on hopefully the link on the credit union's homepage, learn about crypto. But no, a credit union member maybe comes into the branch and starts saying, "I need cash. I'm being asked to buy crypto with it. Do you know anything about that?" Okay, the credit union staff member needs to get involved in that. Again, the frontline staff, the fraud team, the branch staff, the people maybe involved in chat, all of these need to be educated on. Because scams are so rampant, and some of those scams are targeting members. And so credit union staff need to be aware of it. I notice you're withdrawing a lot of money out. Is there anything going on with that? Not to be nosy, not to pry, but just to help protect the members.
Yeah, you're just doing your job.
Yeah, so those are my top three. The white paper goes into a lot more depth. By the way, it's not on the website yet, but psu.com/crypto, sorry for the shameless plug.
Go ahead.
psu.com/crypto has a whole bunch of information and content about this, and then we keep adding to that. Or reach out to me on LinkedIn, Lou Grilli, L-O-U-G-R-I-L-L-I, and if you want to know more about this, let's chat about it.
He is more than happy to talk about it too.
I
know you
can tell.
You are more than happy to talk about it. Anything else, Lou? Because I mean, there's probably three or four white papers in here as well. Not only the one that you're talking about. I think there's a number of other ones too. So
yes,
you have a lot of work ahead of you.
I just went through. I feel like I just went through like painting this doom and gloom picture, and all is bad, and that's not the case. I just saw a survey. I think it was produced by Chainalysis. Just to give credit, there is less than. I think it's 0.1% of the total value of all crypto transactions are suspicious.
Yeah.
That is a tiny... The problem is there is billions of dollars worth of crypto transactions, so we're still talking millions of dollars in suspicious activity.
Right.
And the goal is not to be scared or shut it down. The goal is to keep members safe.
Right.
And that's kind of the ultimate goal.
Right. And there's some guardrails. There's some rules and things to apply. Common sense as well. So there's a lot of stuff. I think we're all still kind of learning as we go here too, right? So there's going to be a lot more rules going to be put in place as well to help protect the consumer out there.
Exactly the case.
And to have it come from your credit union, I think that's the best of all. Because then we go back to what we were talking about the very first, is like you have that trusted resource in helping you in this area. So yeah.
And yes, your credit union is your trusted resource, and PSU wants to be the trusted resource for the credit union.
There you go. Perfect. Well said.
Okay.
On that note, we're going to wrap it up with Mr. Lou Grilli.
That's a close to member four.
Thank you, sir. And that
Thank
is
you,
a
Mike.
Close. That's a wrap on that note.
A quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible. This episode is sponsored by the On with Origins podcast. Learn how credit union experts conquer today's toughest challenges while driving measurable results.